Metcast, Sunday, April 7th, 2019. Hey, Mac Geeks, it's time for your Maccast, the show for Mac Geeks by Mac Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the Maccast. Glad to be back here with you. Yep, another week of Apple Mac news, rumors, tips, tricks, all those things for us to discuss. Hope you're having a great week so far. It's always weird when I'm starting these things out because I don't know when people are actually listening to the show. So it's hard to say, hey, did you have a good weekend? Because, hey, maybe you're listening to this midweek or maybe it's even weeks after I recorded this episode. But regardless, glad to have you here with me. And we certainly do have a number of great things to get into and to discuss. We're going to be looking at the future of iPhone, what's happening with the next generation iPhone, some troubles for Apple stores globally. Yeah, Apple not always getting to open a store where they want. Also, diving into some of those new iPads that came out, the iPad Mini 5 and iPad Air. Yep, they've got their respective teardowns, and we have a little more details about what's on the inside of those devices. A surprising update to an Apple app, or at least surprising for me, maybe not for you. And then another set of earbuds coming out from Apple, wireless ones. We're going to dig into those along with a bunch of other sort of audio, music, Apple-related news, and that'll kind of round out the news for this week. And then surprisingly, you guys rose to the challenge because I had asked, I think on the last episode of the Maccast, if I could get more audio comments. And we actually have 3 bits of audio feedback this week. So we got a question about the iPhone and is it not so exciting anymore? A question about that. We'll dive into that topic. A question about buying the right Mac, somebody looking for some buying advice from us, and so we'll try to help them out there. And then a little bit of follow-up on the Apple Plus news app. I had made some comments about just sort of how it works. Actually, we got some listener questions about usability, and we'll dive into that a little bit. So that'll round out this episode of the Maccast. So don't want to waste any time. Let's just dive right in. What about the future of iPhone? You know, now that we're past Apple's spring announcements, we're kind of free to move full force into iPhone rumor season. I know maybe not everybody's favorite season, but that's where we're at in the news cycle. We'll kick things off with Ming-Chi Kuo, our favorite Apple analyst. Of course, he's in the fray talking about two-way wireless charging or bilateral charging, basically being able to take your iPhone in 2019 and use it as a Qi charger. Yep. So not just place it on the Qi charger and charge it up, but actually turn your phone into a charging device. So you could lay your AirPod charging case on there, wireless charging case, AirPod 2 wireless charging case, and charge that up directly from your phone. Or hey, is your buddy's Android Qi phone running a little bit low on juice? Why not help him out? And he can charge directly from your device. It's actually not a new feature. Some Android phones out in the marketplace already have this, but they are expecting it to come to the 2019 edition of iPhones. Good news here, though, is that he's also expecting, Ming-Chi Kuo, expecting Apple to increase the battery capacity between 10 to 25%, depending upon the model. So surprisingly, the iPhone XS update, he thinks, is going to get the larger battery increase. I guess probably because the Plus models already have a pretty hefty size battery. So getting secondary bilateral charging along with more battery life, that's always exciting to hear in a new iPhone, right? We like more battery life. Yeah, I think everybody, that's the number one feature most people are asking for at this point. This week also saw some follow-up on those triple-lens camera rumors we've been talking about the last few months or so. This time around with an actual image reportedly of the internal chassis that will support those 3 cameras posted on the Chinese social media website Weibo. Or Weibo? I never really know how you're supposed to say that. So if you're in China and want to correct me on that, I think it's Weibo. But it does show the triangle configuration. So we've seen this three lens configuration in kind of a square symmetrical orientation with the True Tone flash as one of those little circles. We've also seen this thing where it's sort of this triangle with two of the camera lenses on the top of each other on the left, and then one sort of in the middle on the right. It's asymmetrical because you, again, have the LED flash in there. So I'm frankly not a fan of any of these triple lens designs because along with it, they come with a pretty nasty square camera bump that looks like a giant wart on the back of the phone. I'm not really liking any of the designs, but I like the concept of a triple lens camera system. And so many rumors are pointing to the fact that Apple is moving in this direction. I think it's something that is going to happen. I'm just hoping they can sort out the design a little bit better before it actually launches. I'd rather they just actually make the phone a bit thicker and fit the lenses all inside. Let's get rid of the camera bump altogether. That would be my vote, but they're not very likely to do that. So I have a feeling we're going to end up with what I'm calling the Ritz cracker camera bump, square camera bump on this future generation. At least one of the rumors claims that new lens, that third lens, is going to be a 5x telephoto lens. So that would be awesome. Nice zoom built in there. And adding that improved zoom also will bring with it a better field of view across the camera lenses and also better low light performance. So a bunch of improvements coming with this new camera system that will also reportedly improve some of the AR capabilities. They're going to do that time of flight 3D depth sensing things. So expect some enhancements to ARKit to come along with this. And it's looking more and more likely that this will be part of this generation's iPhones. The question will be, is it going to be in both models, the updates to the XS and the XS Max, or will it be reserved just for the top of the line, the XS Max models? And we've heard rumors supporting both those theories. So we don't really know, but it's looking more and more likely we are going to get the triple lens camera system. And this latest leak is just more evidence of that. At least Apple is working on it in their prototypes. I think that's the one thing we can assume from these leaks. The other thing we can pretty much assume about the 2019 iPhone is that it will not come with a 5G modem or 5G modem support. That is because Apple has been in its long-standing fight with Qualcomm, and currently Intel lacks a 5G modem. They're not expected to have 5G modems over on the Intel side until about 2020, and now we're hearing reports that even then they might not be ready for Apple's development cycle. So Apple has a lead time going into it, and those 5G modems might not make the cut even for the 2020 versions of the iPhone, which leaves Apple in a bit of a pickle, because I think they can get away with it this year. You know, 5G support is rolling out slowly. It's not expected to be in wide availability in 2019, but come 2020, yeah, there's going to be a lot more carriers supporting it. So Apple will want to have a device in 2020 that has a 5G modem in it if they can. Now, they've been frantically trying to develop some in-house designs, and they've set up a massive engineering team, been doing a lot of hiring that we've been talking about here on the MacCast, but it's looking like that effort is not going to be ready to produce results until about 2021. So a little bit of a dilemma with the future iPhones. I'm sure Apple will sort it out by then. Intel is saying they are going to have modems ready in 2020 to ship in client devices, and let's hope that Apple is actually on that list. And then finally, in the iPhone rumors, looking forward into 2020, DigiTimes says that Apple is going to release all OLED phones finally by 2020. You know, right now we have the two OLED displays with the premium iPhones, then of course we've got the iPhone XR with its LCD display. That's expected to continue in 2019, but come 2020, DigiTimes says we're getting three OLED displays. What's interesting about their rumor is that they're saying we'll get one display that's larger than the current ones, one that is about the same size, and one actually coming in slightly smaller. They're saying in 2020, Apple will ship phones with a 5.4 2-inch display, a 6.06-inch display, and a 6.67-inch display. That largest one expected to go in the large 10S Max model in the Max line. The 6.06 is actually exactly the same size as what we round up and call the 6.1-inch display in the iPhone XR. And yeah, surprisingly, that 5.42-inch display, that reportedly would be the replacement for the iPhone XS display that we have today, meaning that maybe displays are going to come back down in size, or it could just be a new entry-level model for Apple. We don't really know. Could they be bringing back the iPhone SE at a larger size, maybe with no home button and no bezels? That display could fit that size model. We don't really know at this point. I mean, it's really early rumors, and I wouldn't put too much stock in it. I can't believe DigiTimes is already kind of trying to predict out until 2020, but hey, that's what some of the rumor sites do. They're also saying that these new OLED displays in 2020 would be thinner because of some new display technology that would be removing a film substrate, and so they'd just be a hair thinner. And Apple, as we know, likes to have thinness as part of their designs. So we'll have to wait until 2020 on those. And that's kind of the latest rumors surrounding iPhone at this point. We're also getting rumors, of course, about the next generation of Apple Watch. A couple of these just to comment on really quickly. Reuters is claiming that Japan Display might become a new OLED screen supplier for Apple, specifically for Apple Watch. It would be actually that company's first venture into the OLED market. They're a little bit behind and they've been suffering for it, so this would be a nice little boost for them, getting a little bit of Apple's Apple Watch business. We're also hearing that Apple continues to look into how to push forward sensor technology on the Apple Watch. We are expecting more health features at some point, and some of that may be enabled by a patent application Apple has filed recently called Compact Particulate Material Sensors, basically adding smell sensors to the Apple Watch. And while that might sound a little bit odd, there's actually some really cool things that Apple could do with that, including giving your Apple Watch the ability to report on air quality, detect things like allergens in the air, maybe detect hazardous gases like carbon monoxide, so maybe it could tap and wake you up if there was a carbon monoxide leak, and supposedly you can also detect low blood sugar levels from body odor. So there may be some interesting applications for this type of sensor. Of course, what we're looking at here is simply a patent, and Apple patents stuff all the time, and it doesn't necessarily make its way into products, but this could be a direction that they're thinking about moving in and doing some research in. Will that be part of the next generation Apple Watch? Very unlikely, but maybe the generation after that. So some interesting things happening on the Apple Watch and iPhone fronts. I don't know about you, but I am actually a pretty big fan of Apple stores. I love to go check them out when I'm in various states. I haven't been internationally to an Apple store yet, but we have a few here in California, and I've been to several of those, had an opportunity to go to the Chicago store, the New York stores, and I love just hanging out in them, and I love the fact that Apple continues to expand Apple retail store locations, but it turns out not everybody, especially some countries, really aren't all that interested in having an Apple store. As much as they bring revenue and tourists and all those sorts of things, depending upon the location, Apple has been having a rough time expanding into some countries. And this week, we have two countries who basically told Apple, nope, you can't have an Apple store here. Starting off with Israel, Apple was hoping to open up a Tel Aviv location in the Azrieli Sarona Tower, which is a large skyscraper there in Tel Aviv, but they've been shut down by the mall owners who have basically rejected Apple's terms. Apple trying to throw its weight around a little bit and sell them on the fact that they're going to bring a lot of business to their mall. Well, they apparently weren't really buying it. You know, Apple likes to trade on its volume and its affluence and the affluence of its customer base, and that did not work this time around. According to the reports, Apple had tried to negotiate with other malls in the area as well, and none of them seemed to want to agree to Apple's terms. So that means, Tel Aviv, you're probably not getting an Apple retail store, at least not anytime soon. And supposedly, part of the problem was those terms were making the malls actually cover things like marketing and inventory loss, or inventory costs, rather, and that was something they were not interested in paying for. So they told Apple no, and Apple has basically stopped looking around, according to latest reports. Apple also has halted development on their proposed Federation Square store in Melbourne, Australia. We've actually been talking about this one on the MacCast here for a while. Apple had met a lot of resistance to that project, including at the very beginning when they didn't like the design of the store, and Apple actually went back to the drawing board and redesigned it. Most recently, the Heritage Authority there has blocked development by declining a demolition permit that Apple had applied for. Basically, they wanted to demolish the Yarra building, which was there, and this was another point of contention in that community, to make way for this new Apple retail store. Well, after the permit was blocked, Apple basically told the Sydney Morning Herald that they would no longer pursue the Melbourne project. That means, yep, no Apple retail store in Melbourne at all either. So that's what's been going on with Apple retail. Unfortunately, I think if you live in either of those regions and you're an Apple fan, this is not great news. But you're certainly not alone. These aren't the first two countries to push back on Apple and have Apple then pull out of their deal. Remember, Apple had to walk away from a proposed Sweden store in Stockholm after the city council rejected Apple's proposals there. So Apple not afraid to walk away from these things. I'm sure they're going to continue to look for new locations. It just might not be in these cities or in these countries. Of course, I'd say never say never, because obviously they wanted to be in those locations or regions due to, I would presume, a large volume of customers in those regions. So if they can work something out in the future, I'm sure they'll be back. But for now, that's what's happening with their Apple Store efforts in Tel Aviv and Melbourne. You may remember that right before Apple had its services event, where it announced all of its Apple TV Plus and News Plus and Apple Arcade and Apple Card stuff, that they also had rolled out a couple of new devices, including some new iPads, the iPad Mini 5 and the next generation of their iPad Air. Well, you know, also, if you've been an Apple follower or watcher for a long time or a listener to this podcast, that anytime new hardware comes out, yep, the folks over at iFixit, they get in there and they rip it apart, tear it down, and give us a look, you know, on the inside to try and see what is different and what makes the new devices tick. Well, this week was no exception. They got their hands on both an iPad Mini 5 and a new iPad Air, tore those things apart, and now we have a little bit more details on what's going on. On the outside with the iPad Mini 5, they say it looks exactly the same visually, except that they have removed the regulatory marks on the back. So those used to be engraved on the back of the fourth generation iPad Mini, no longer there on the iPad Mini 5. They're in the software under the About section. And that was something I think that was enabled at some point by some changes to some regulations. So that's the visual difference. On the inside, there's some nice little goodies as well. It gets the same 7-megapixel f2.2 FaceTime camera from the iPad Pro 10.5-inch, which is a huge jump up from what was in the fourth generation iPad Mini, just a 1.2-megapixel sensor. So big improvements in the FaceTime camera. Also, you get a little bit more RAM, 3 gigabytes up from the 2 gigs that was in the 4th gen model. And of course, you have that new A12 Bionic chip, which is really nice. Great performance there. And the only other significant design change of note on the inside, it does appear to have a new type of battery with a new type of connector, although it is the same size, 19.32 watt hour capacity. Moving over to the new iPad Air, this is actually even more similar to a prior generation model, the 10.5-inch iPad Pro. It's identical in size and thickness, but just a tad lighter. It has a logic board layout similar to the 2017 iPad Pro as well, with the new dual-cell battery. Basically, iFixit notes that, for all intents and purposes, it's essentially a 10.5-inch iPad Pro with a few big differences, the biggest thing being that it lacks the 120 hertz ProMotion display from the 10.5-inch iPad Pro, so bringing it more into that consumer level, and also loses the extra couple speakers. It has the two stereo speakers and not the four quadraphonic or four stereo speakers that the Pro models have. So definitely is a non-Pro model, but has a ton of Pro features at a really great price. So I think the iPad Air is actually a phenomenal device. So if you've been in the market for a new iPad and you're not ready to go Pro or pay or don't want to pay the Pro price, you can get pretty close to Pro, it seems like, with this new iPad Air. And speaking of the iPad Pro, unfortunately, it sounds like some owners are running into a little bit of trouble. Now, I have not seen or heard of this myself. We haven't had any reports here in the MacCast community, but I may after I run this story. Mac Rumors is reporting on a growing Apple support thread where a number of 2018 iPad Pro owners are starting to report having screen issues. Most of the reports are about the screens not registering touch gestures, stuttering when scrolling, missing keystrokes, or having other screen-related problems, or more, I guess, touch sensor-related problems. It's not clear exactly what is causing the issue or how extensive it is, but there have been reports of some people experiencing the issues right out of the box, including one report of somebody saying he was having the problems on a newly purchased iPad Pro, took it back, Apple happily exchanged it, and he only ended up having actually worse problems on the replacement model. Now, again, I don't think this is a widespread issue. There are also some reports in this thread of people having issues after a few months of use, and even some reports of folks having issues with 2017 and 2016 models. So we don't know what's causing it. It could be multiple different issues because there are different models. Some folks are alleging that it might be software related to some of the recent iOS software updates. We really just don't know. The reports do seem to be somewhat random. The good news is that for the most part, it seems like when people bring it to Apple's attention, so contact their Genius Bar or phone up Apple for support, Apple does seem to be responding, and in many cases just simply replacing units, at least in the case of the 2018 models. So if you have run into some problems with your new iPad Pro, make sure you contact Apple, get it looked at, and hopefully they can resolve the issues for you. And I'm really hoping this isn't a widespread issue, but again, if anyone in the MacCast community has been experiencing this with your iPad Pro, let us know about it. Shoot me an email, maccast@gmail.com. Apple updated their Clips app this week. What, Adam? What app? Yes, the Clips app. You remember the Clips app? I guess it's still around and it's still being actively updated. I think it's a great, fun app. I've played around with it a few times myself, so I don't mean to knock it, but I don't think it's been the critical success or has taken off, mainly, at least not here in the U.S., as much as Apple has wanted, although they continue to work on it, I guess. This week, they added some new posters, a new title and caption options. They updated the stickers and added a camcorder filter and a bunch more. The new camcorder actually adds a retro video look to your clips. That could be pretty cool. And some of the stickers, they added 8-bit stickers and 3D stickers, so you can throw those on your videos. Also added support for adding songs from GarageBand and threw in ClassKit support. And so maybe that's the market Apple is delivering this into. So ClassKit allows students to put together video assignments and then submit them to their teachers through Apple's schoolwork application. So is that where it's being used? If you're in education and you're using the Clips app, I think it would actually be great for a video course, right? A great way to give your students just an iPhone, send them out, and they can record and put together and produce a really quick video. It is actually kind of an interesting way of doing video editing. It's kind of that real time. You kind of do everything on the fly and come up with something by basically meshing or merging clips together. If you haven't played around with the Clips app, you can download it from the App Store. It is free, and it's fun to play around with. Like I said, I've enjoyed playing around with it. I've just never found a day-to-day use for it. And so it is nice to see Apple continues to support it and continues to update it. And then finally in the news for this week, looks like the AirPods are not going to be Apple's only true wireless headphones anymore. They announced this week that Beats, which is owned by Apple now, has unveiled the Beats Power Beats Pro line, which is taking a cue from the AirPods and dumping the wire from the Beats Power model to become, quote, totally wireless. It has its own very large lightning-powered charging case and features Apple's new H1 chip, which is the fancy new chip that Apple updated in the new AirPod Generation 2 models. Also comes, because of that new chip, with support for Hey Lady or Hey Dude, depending upon which country you're in, and offers the same seamless setup experience with your Apple devices. There are a couple areas where the new Beats Power Beats Pros kind of trump the AirPods. Specifically, they come in various color options, so not just white. You can get black, ivory, navy, or moss. They have different ear tips to help fit different sized ears, which also helps them offer a little bit better noise isolation. They're rated for sweat and water resistance, of course, because they're meant for working out. And they come with even more battery life, about 4 hours more battery than the AirPods, and you can get up to 24 hours of total combined playback battery life using the charging case. And the charging case is pretty big. A lot of the reviews that I've been seeing, early reviews, because they're not quite out yet, are noting the size of that case. It's not something you're just going to be able to slip in your pocket, but you certainly can fit it into your gym bag, and having that extra battery life is pretty nice. They're priced a little bit more expensive than the latest generation AirPods with the wireless charging case. The Beats Power Beats Pro will set you back about $299 US. So nice to see Apple updating that line with some of the new features and the new chipsets coming out of the AirPods. And so if you're in the market for an alternative, that might be one you want to look into. Also in audio news, Apple reduced the price of the HomePod. So if you've been in the market for the HomePod, the price on HomePods did drop $50 US this week. So they're now priced at $299. If you're international, Apple is doing similar, if not equal, price drops internationally. So check your local Apple listings, see how much you can save on a HomePod. I still absolutely love my HomePod. I don't know if I'd plunk down another $300 for another one. I think I would if I had some extra disposable income, but just not in my life right now. They certainly are great, and I know a lot of people who have picked up a pair and said they sound even better as a stereo pair. So I'd like to do that at some point. If I had the money, I'd probably jump in right now, because this is a nice little price drop. But, you know, a lot of people still arguing it's still on the pricier side for a wireless speaker. And yeah, that's true, but maybe a little bit more competitive with Sonos models at this price point. Also, keeping with the music news, we found out this week, if you're in the UK, that Apple Music is going to be coming soon to your Amazon Echo and Fire devices. This is something that Apple rolled out, or I guess really Amazon rolled out here in the US a few months back. They are going to be rolling this feature out in the next few weeks in the UK. So those owners of Amazon Echoes, hey, you can get your Apple Music now on your device or in the next coming weeks. So be watching your Amazon Echo updates for that new feature. The Wall Street Journal says Apple Music paid subscribers now outnumber Spotify paid subscribers, at least here in the U.S. Apple had more than 28 million U.S. subscribers in February, according to the Wall Street Journal, compared to Spotify's 26 million paid U.S. subscribers. So Apple besting them by about 2 million. They also say that subscriber rates are growing at a slightly higher rate for Apple Music than Spotify globally, Apple growing at about 2.4 to 2.8% versus 2 to 2.3% for Spotify. So Apple rapidly adding new subscribers to Apple Music and gaining steam on Spotify. And that's pretty amazing considering that Apple was a pretty late comer to the market. But I think it shows that Apple Music, it's actually a great experience. I really enjoy using it. I tried Spotify for a while, and this isn't a knock on Spotify because I know there's a ton of you out there who love Spotify. It's a slightly different experience, and it's nice that we have the ability to pick and choose which one we really like. But you know, all things aside, I know that I'm an Apple fanboy, but I think that Apple Music, I really like the personalization. I like the recommendations that it gives me. And I think the human curation along with some of the artificial intelligence just works really well for me. And maybe it is because I actually am all in on Apple products. I don't really know. But Apple obviously wanting to expand its services. And so this is some pretty good news in that department. Last little bit of sort of media-related news, I guess. Netflix has reportedly or actually dropped AirPlay functionality from its iOS app. And this was a little bit disappointing. They cited in their notes that they did it due to technical limitations, and that was about it. We didn't really know why they removed this feature. Well, they came back, gave a little bit more detail. They say the issue is actually Apple opening up AirPlay to other non-Apple TV devices. So things like smart TVs or other speakers, that means Netflix says that they don't really know which devices you're AirPlaying Netflix to. And they take issue with that because they say, well, that diminishes our ability to control the experience and make sure that people are having the best video experience that they can possibly have. So they want you to use the Netflix app with your iOS devices because they say that's the best experience, and they are removing AirPlay support, which I think is really unfortunate because it was a truly great feature. And I don't like anything that ultimately limits consumers' options. I think we should have the option to use AirPlay and let the consumer decide what experience they want to have. But Netflix, in this case, saying they want it their way, and they are choosing to remove that support. So that's unfortunate. But with that, that is going to do it for the news for this week. Before we move on, I do want to take a quick moment and thank a couple show sponsors, starting with Keeps. You know, for some men, losing hair is a big deal. And even if I didn't really see it or understand it, I know it was something that affected my dad. I've already told you about some of the crazy things he did to try to slow his hair loss, like standing on his head. Well, the reality is that 2 out of 3 guys will actually experience hair loss by the time they're 35. So if hair loss is kind of a big deal to you and something that you're dealing with, there is Keeps. It's the easiest and most affordable way to keep the hair you have. Getting started with Keeps is super easy. Sign up takes less than 5 minutes, and you're able to do it right from the comfort of your own home. Just answer a few questions, snap some photos of your hair, and they will have a licensed physician review your information online and recommend the right treatment for you. And then that treatment is shipped right to your door every 3 months. Keeps actually offers generic versions of the only 2 FDA-approved hair loss products out there. Some of you have probably tried them before, but you probably have never gotten them for this price. Keeps is only $10 to $35 a month, plus now you can get your first month free. That's one hell of a deal for getting to keep your hair. To receive your first month treatment for free, go to keeps.com/Mattcast. That's KEEPS.com/Mattcast. That's a free month of treatment at keeps.com/Mattcast. Keeps, Hair today, hair tomorrow. And a big thank you to them for their support of the MacCast. I'd also like to thank Malwarebytes for their support of the show. You know, we all know that Apple and our Macs come with a bunch of built-in protections that keep us as safe as possible from things like viruses and malware, but there's a flaw in that protection, really, and that flaw is us. And if not you, then likely maybe a friend or a family member who's not quite as tech savvy or aware as we are has run into some trouble. I know I've had some of these people in my life. I've even had some clients and some friends in my user group who have called up and asked for my help, said, hey, my machine's running slow. What's going on? It's getting all these weird beach balls. These weird pop-ups are coming up. I don't know what's going on. And as much as we'd like to help and protect them from themselves, you know, things happen. And that's why I absolutely love Malwarebytes. You've heard me mention Malwarebytes on the show in the past. I really do think it's one of the best and easiest tools on the Mac for quickly scanning, removing, and preventing malware. Malwarebytes uses proven technology that absolutely crushes the growing threat of Mac malware. And it certainly is growing, right? There's a lot of stuff out there. Macs are becoming more popular, of course, and that means we're getting to be a bigger and bigger target. What I like about Malwarebytes is that it's quick and easy. It scans the average Mac in under 30 seconds and will remove adware and unwanted programs that can slow your Mac down and cause all sorts of problems. And when you need more active protection, Malwarebytes detects and removes viruses, ransomware, and other malware in real time with advanced anti-malware technology. It catches dangerous threats automatically, so you're protected without even having to think about it. Finally, cybersecurity smart enough for your Mac. Visit malwarebytes.com for your free download and a 14-day trial of their premium offering. That's malwarebytes.com, MalwareBytes.com for a free download and a 14-day trial of their premium offering. And a big thank you to Malwarebytes for their support of the MacCast. We've had iPhones since, 2007, right? So about 12 years or so. And it's a pretty mature product, a lot of features. It's gone through a lot of enhancements and refinements over the years. But I think most recently, a lot of people have been looking around going, what's next for iPhone? What's happening? And we've talked about it a lot here on the show. Well, this week I received an email, or actually an audio comment, from my friend Will over in the UK. And he's been thinking about iPhone as well. And here's what he had to say.
Hello, friend. It's Will from the UK. So I just thought I'd reach out and I suppose generally just say thank you. I absolutely love the MacCast. It was one of the very first podcasts I ever listened to, and it's absolutely superb. I still steal your show notes, of course. but why not? Anyway, but for the MacCast listenership, I thought I'd ask you a question about the future of the iPhone. I was reading an article today, and it said iPhone 11, is it going to be boring? And I sort of thought about this, and is it going to be dull? To be fair to Apple, where can they take this thing? We've got the new fold-up stuff going on, and it strikes me as slightly gimmicky. Because they're desperate of things to innovate and to do in a new place. The form factor, I suppose, well, as always, can be made thinner, but what's the point? Not much of an innovation. I suppose the one bright thing we can look forward to, and I suppose it applies to the iPad more than the iPhone, is iOS 13, which I think we're going to see the iPad transform into pretty much a desktop replacement and get away from the you know, years ago I bought the very first iPad, and if I'm honest, not that much has changed in the user interface and the user experience. The iPhone, I don't know what they'll do about it. I would like to see a change in So physically, it's always going to be a square phone or what, rectangular. But the key thing is it would be lovely to see an update to the user interface for the iPhone as well as the iPad. Anyway, keep up the great work. I listen to you every week or every time it comes out. You're brilliant. Okay.
Hey, thanks, Will. Appreciate it. Appreciate the question. And just appreciate you. And you're welcome to steal my show notes anytime you want. A lot of people don't know this, but all my stuff's released under Creative Commons. It's a share alike license. So, hey, go for it. Do what you want. I've given you permission before. Will is a good friend. Actually, known him virtually through the podcast community for a while. He won't say it, but I'll say it for him. He does the podcast, The British Mac. You can check out britishmac.com if you want to check out Will's podcast as well. But let's talk about this, Will. Is the iPhone boring? I don't know if I'd call it boring. I think it's become a staple. It's become something that is a mature product that doesn't have a lot of new innovations to bring. And if I guess innovation is the only sign of something not being boring, then yeah, maybe I guess it is. I don't know. That's such a tough question. Like you pointed out, what would make it more exciting? You know, what do we need to do to it to bring excitement? I certainly don't think some of the stuff we were talking about earlier, like just adding another camera lens, really does that. Apple's tried many things over the years that are interesting, but I don't know if it absolutely makes it more exciting. I mean, we've got Animoji and Memoji. Those are certainly fun. They've added a lot of fun things, and I guess some people consider fun exciting kind of be the same thing. I mean, they've done some neat things. Some of the AR kit stuff and those sort of things I think are great, but are they big life-changing features? And I think that's what people think about when they say exciting for the iPhone. Like, that first generation iPhone, when it replaced horrible flip phones and what other people were calling smartphones that were really kind of dumb phones, yeah, that was revolutionary. And I think it's those revolutionary instances where we say, yeah, that's amazing, that's exciting. And you get a couple of years of that, right? The first few iPhones going from the original iPhone to the iPhone 3, 3GS, and then, new redesigns. But it's matured. It's become a great product and a stable product and something that I think a lot of people the world over love, myself included. And I don't want it to really change too much. I like the stability at this point. I like the reliability. I like knowing that this thing works a certain way and it continues to work a certain way and it just sort of refines with age. And I think that's really what you want in a product like the iPhone. We saw it with the iPod too, right? And we still have the iPod Touch around, but it's a mature, somewhat boring product, but it's a stable product and it's a product that a lot of people really rely on. And I think the iPhone falls into that category. So that doesn't bother me, I guess. It should be boring at this point, to a certain degree. And I think you're right about the software. Maybe there's some more things that they could do with the software. I think iOS is getting better all the time. Does it need to change drastically either for the iPhone? Probably not so much. I was trying to think about what new features I would want software-wise on the iPhone, something that my current iPhone doesn't do that I want it to do, and I really can't think of anything racking my brain. I agree with you on the iPad side of things. There's a lot of enhancements and improvements they can do. I know this is kind of an old story, old thing that gets drug out all the time, but I certainly think, as you mentioned, if iPads are truly to become an alternative, a laptop or a desktop alternative for a lot of people, where it needs to go is in better file management and, more importantly, better external storage options, right? The ability to actually plug in a USB-C drive and actually have that as available storage. I think that's a big deal. I think it's something that Apple has really been ignoring for far too long. I think they think the cloud is the ultimate end-all be-all solution, and I don't think that thinking is right. I also think inter-app file communication, they need to come up with a better solution. They started off telling us we couldn't have anything, right? And then ultimately gave in and gave us the Files app, which I think is great and a good sort of interim solution. But we certainly need something that's a lot more integrated, feels a lot more like I don't want to say the Finder, because I think the Finder needs a lot of improvement as well. So I wouldn't want to see them just sort of bring that to iOS and to iPads. I think they need to do something better. I think Files is moving in the right direction. I think it's more about letting apps in some way have better access to a centralized file system, right? It's still siphoned off. It's still kind of siloed between the apps, and you're doing a lot of copying around, and it's got a lot of, it's encumbered. It's very cumbersome to actually use Files still with iOS apps, which is a little bit weird. And I think it's something they ultimately need to address. But that doesn't really change things for the iPhone, right? I don't think people are doing a lot of document management on the iPhone, but I guess I could be wrong. So what are they going to do? What is going to make the iPhone exciting? And I think what's going to make the iPhone exciting is moving beyond the iPhone, beyond that square form factor. I think you're absolutely right in terms of the design. I don't think it's going to change very much. But I think we're moving away from the iPhone as a thing onto something else at some point. I think we're about 5 to 10 years away from that. So I think we're going to stick with this mature form factor, just sort of slowly and gradually getting better with age to the point where it's ultimately put out to pasture and replaced by something else. And what is that something else? I don't know. I think we're seeing a lot of experimenting. We'll see a lot of early adoption alternatives to the iPhone coming out. I think we're already starting to see that in the form of various kinds of wearables. As much as we may like it or not like it, I think screens are coming to our glasses and to our contact lenses. You know, we know that the Google Glass experiment sort of failed, but I think it only failed because it was way before its time. I look at it like something like the Newton, right? The iPhone is basically the Newton for the modern age, and the Newton was just way ahead of its time. And I think Google Glass was ahead of its time, but it proved some things. It showed some things. I think, one, that people don't want a outward-facing camera, but hey, maybe something that's inward-facing or giving us a screen, a heads-up display all of the time in our eyes, I think that could be very interesting. And it moves us away from having this screen in our hand that we have to hold up, right, and puts it right there when and where we need it. And there's going to be various technologies and various things to do that. We already know about companies that have developed contact lenses that work as displays with some pretty innovative technologies, like being able to generate power from your eye actually blinking. Is it enough to actually power a display like that for any significant amount of time? At this point, no, but you know, that's where technology starts, and I think we're eventually going to get there. So that's very interesting. I think voice interfaces are going to become much more prevalent. I think that's a little bit about what AirPods are all about, right? And adding the hey lady, hey dude technology to AirPods is another step in that direction. Just having AirPods as something that people are wearing commonly, and look around. I mean, there's a lot of people wearing AirPods. It's becoming more socially acceptable. When you move away from actually having a screen interface with a keyboard, a touch interface, what's the next interface? I think audio is potentially part of that, right? So imagine heads-up display, something in front of your eyes all the time, and then interacting with that with your voice. And taking phone calls on that and just saying, hey, pick up the phone, or the phone rings and you see who's calling and you can take the call or not take the call. You can get your notifications. And ultimately, you know, when we're talking about iPhone, it's not really a phone for most people anymore, right? It's a communications device, usually some other form of communication that's not voice communication. I think AR, augmented reality, is going to play a huge role in whatever replaces the iPhone or becomes next for the iPhone. So I think the hybrid is some sort of multiple wearable device, a wireless body network, imagine that sort of thing. So you'll have something in your pocket that's maybe like an iPhone, maybe a little cube or a little dongle that's connected to your keys. Maybe you don't even have keys anymore. Maybe that dongle serves as your keys and your payment device. And I don't really know. You know, maybe it's a little pebble that you just carry in your pocket, smooth stone, and that's the computer, that's the centralized brain, and then that wirelessly connects to the glasses that you're wearing that acts as a display, and the thing in your ear that acts as your voice interface for that for that device. And ultimately, I think that is the replacement. Maybe even we have batteries built into our clothing because power is going to be an issue. And where are you going to put that? Well, maybe it's integrated right into the fabric of your clothes. It's woven into that. Do you have dynamos in your shoes so you're generating power as you walk? Or maybe the fabrics on your clothing also are solar panels and they're gathering power as you just walk around. I think there's a lot of solutions that we're going to move to in the future. Like I said, I think we're years, if not decades, away from those solutions, but I think that's when quote unquote iPhone becomes exciting. So when iPhone becomes not boring is, in my mind, when it's not an iPhone. And that's kind of my take on it. I don't know. I'd love to hear what you think. What are you thinking in this direction? And also, what are you thinking? Shoot me some emails and some audio comments. Let's answer Will's question here. What does the community think? Is the iPhone boring? Is it too boring? And what's next? Love to hear your audio comments. Send your emails and those to maccast@gmail.com. And Will, huge thanks for sending in your comment, your observations, and your question. I really appreciate it. So another thing that came up this week is we have a listener who would like some help with an iMac purchase. With the latest iMac updates, I think things with the product line are getting a little bit blurry again. This happens as we go through generations of devices, right? If you're in the market for a new iMac, you've got a few choices, a number of different levels in the iMac line, including all the way up to the iMac Pro. And depending upon what your needs are, you may be struggling with making a purchase. And that certainly was something that Nacho was struggling with when he sent me this comment.
Hi, Adam. My name is Nacho. I've listened to your podcast for many years now. This is the first time I'm getting in contact with you, though. I'm considering to buy a new iMac 2019, but I can't decide between the two. 21.5 inches or the 27. My concern, maybe the 27 inches is too big of a screen for me, and I would have with neck pains or so. So what could be your advice? Thank you. Thank you, Adam.
Hey, Nacho. Thank you for sending in your question. It can be very confusing. I actually, after I received your voicemail and your email, I went on Apple's website and started doing some cost comparisons and pricing out all of the different options. And depending upon how you configure things, you can get price points pretty close to each other. So let's see if we can help you out kind of make this decision. I know ergonomics was one of the issues you talked about in your voicemail there. You know, going from a 21.5-inch screen to a 27-inch display, it's a pretty big jump. That iMac display is pretty big. I don't think you're going to get any neck strain, though, with the 27-inch model. I've used that size display before. I actually use a 24-inch display with my 15-inch MacBook Pro display as I'm working on the podcast and stuff like that, and I have the GarageBand up on one screen. I have my show notes up on another screen. And yeah, you're doing a little head turning, but I don't think it's going to really be a big problem. You're usually, when you're working on even a dual screen display, you're kind of focused on one area of that screen and you're not really moving around too much. So I like having the screen real estate, and that might be something that you may consider. But just so the community knows, you also sent me an email and you mentioned a few other things about trying to make this decision. One was that you had a budget, a pretty healthy budget of about $2,800 US or 2,500 euros. So certainly that's going to get you a 21.5-inch or a 27-inch iMac very easily, depending upon your configuration. You also mentioned that you wanted SSD storage, at least 512 gigabytes, which I think is a good, healthy amount of storage. You currently have a 21-inch iMac that you're looking to replace, and you mentioned that you were happy with that size and that model, that really the only issue was it's just getting long in the tooth. It's getting a little bit slower, and you want something with a little bit more power. He would like something that would last about 7 years, and the main uses are internet, music, pictures. You also mentioned using Outlook and Excel, where you're a power user, which is really cool. I don't know how to do much with Excel, so I'm always in awe of those folks who can really make that program work. And then you said possibly that you might want to run parallels for some various reasons, and that you don't do a lot of video editing, but really you want something that's going to have longevity, similar to the longevity you've had with your current 21.5-inch iMac. So given all of those things, sort of that budget, your use case, the fact that you're already happy with the 21-inch display, I would say stick with the 21.5-inch in your case. I don't think you need to go to the 27-inch. Really, the only option there, I think, would be if you want to get the 9th-generation Intel processor. I think the 21.5-inch is limited, if I'm remembering right, to the 8th-gen processor. So it's a little bit older Intel processor, but not old by any means. And bumping up to the 27-inch with the 9th-gen Intel actually could blow out your budget. So you wouldn't have a lot of wiggle room to get some of those extras. I know another thing you were considering was, the i5 processor on the 21.5-inch iMac versus the i7. Both of those are 6 cores. They would both be huge speed improvements over what you have. And I really think when it comes to CPUs these days, i5 versus i7 versus i9, yeah, there's nice little enhancements, but at the end of the day, the clock speeds are pretty close to each other, 3.0 to 3.2 gigahertz. And I don't think you get a huge bump up in performance jumping to the next level of CPU. You get a nice little bump, maybe 10%, maybe 20% on the top end, depending upon the application. But really, I think a better graphics processor is probably going to benefit you. And there are some upgrade options for the GPU. So I would almost say save a little bit of money on the CPU and take that money and put it in some other areas. And I think the biggest area you can put that into for performance would probably be in the RAM, and then follow that up with the GPU if you have a little bit more stuff. I also think, though, storage for longevity is probably the most critical thing, right? Especially with an iMac, because you can't add additional internal storage. Well, storage and RAM. So I would really focus on spending the money there. Get as much SSD storage, flash storage, and RAM as you possibly can. I would start with the storage. Personally, I think 1 terabyte is the bare minimum for storage these days, because you're always going to want more. So buy more of that if you can afford it. And I think 16 gigabytes of RAM is the bare minimum. The more, the better. So I would almost go with, trying to get into that 32 gigabyte range if you can. Again, thinking about that longevity. If you want this thing to last 7 years, you're going to want more RAM. And in the case of the iMac, I probably would spend the money on the RAM first, only because of the fact that you could get some Thunderbolt 3 fast external storage if you needed to supplement the internal storage, right? And SSD prices, even for external drives, is just going to keep coming down. So if you had to pick or choose, get more RAM, spend your extra money there, maybe get more GPU, and then, bump up the flash storage beyond the 512 that you're looking at. But if you think you can get by with 512, again, save the money there and spend it someplace else. Again, everybody's mileage is going to vary, right? Depending upon the use case. So for me, I'd probably want to spend a little bit more money, or take some of that money and put it into storage, because I like having an internal storage as opposed to external. Although again, that's more with a laptop. With a desktop, it probably is less of an issue, right? So just kind of thinking out loud a little bit here. But that's maybe the way I would look. If there is any budget left over after, spending money on storage and RAM and GPU, then sure, go ahead, bump up the CPU if you can. But I don't think you're going to be left with much, at least not at that budget, at least with how I was pricing things out on Apple's website. When it comes to the display, another reason why I'm recommending you stick with the 21.5-inch is, guess what? Your iMac can actually drive an external display. So you can always add a display later if you want something bigger, right? If you suddenly decide 21.5 inches isn't big enough, add a second display, and now you've got even more screen real estate. The iMacs can actually drive 1 5K external display if you want, along with the internal display, or 2 4K 4K displays, either ultra high definition displays or just standard 4K external displays. So you could have three displays and a ton of screen real estate. And I guarantee you, if you put two large displays on either side of that 21.5 inch, then you might start to have some neck strain problems. But it might be a good problem to have because you'll have a lot of screen real estate depending upon what you're trying to do. So that would be my advice. Again, that's just me as one person. We do have the community out there, so if you feel differently about this or you think my advice should be a little bit tweaked or different, send in your audio comments and your emails, and we'll pass those along to Nacho as well. But that's what I'm thinking about it. And, you know, I think regardless of whatever you decide, the bump up from your current iMac to a new iMac, I think it's going to be brilliant. I think you're absolutely going to love it. So enjoy your new machine, and I hope this helped you out a little bit. All right, the last thing that I want to talk about today is somewhat of a little bit of follow-up to the Apple News Plus comments that I made on a previous episode of the MacCast. You know, Apple News Plus, it's actually getting some interest. New York Times reported this week that Apple News Plus had more than 200,000 people sign up during the first 48 hours of availability. I think a lot of that is because Apple's offering a free trial, and a lot of us Apple nerds wanted to try it out. And it's going to be interesting to see how many of us actually stick around after that free 30-day trial period. I know for my part, I'm probably not going to keep it, but that's only because I'm just not into reading magazines and newspapers. I just don't do it that frequently. I've been using the Apple News app a little bit more, I will tell you, and I do actually enjoy the experience, but I'm just not that into it, and I just don't honestly have that much time, so I don't know if I can justify the cost personally for me. But something else that I was commenting on a previous episode of the MacCast was the fact that I kind of felt like the Apple News section, Apple News Plus section where the magazines are, had some serious usability issues and discoverability issues too. It's not really user-friendly or intuitive. And I actually had a bunch of you ask me, you know, how do I add magazines to the My Magazines section? And frankly, I couldn't figure it out just by using the app. I actually had to go online, do some Googling, and try and figure it out. And I shared this on the last episode of the MacCast, but you actually have to go into a magazine, tap on the masthead, and then heart or favorite the magazine, and then that adds it to your My Magazine section. And none of that stuff is really clear. And so I was commenting on that, and we have a listener who works in that field of user experience and user interface, Jim, and he sent in some of his thoughts on the usability. So here's what Jim had to say about Apple News Plus and the user interface.
Hey, Adam, Jim here. I wanted to just touch base on some of Nielsen Norman's usability heuristics. Nielsen Norman Group, they provide research in user experience design, and they released 10 usability heuristics back in 1994. And a lot of these are very relevant, even in the technology that we're using today. I want to touch base on two, though, specifically for Apple News Plus. The first one is visibility of system status. This, I believe, relates very highly to some of the things I believe you might have mentioned on when you started giving your impressions of the Apple News Plus app. And basically what this is referring to is when you actually go in and you start browsing the catalogs, all the different magazines, it's not incredibly clear on how the user is supposed to get to that actual issue's back catalog. So what they have to do currently is they have to click into the magazine and then click the magazine's title in the upper menu bar. And then they'll be taken to the back catalog of that particular magazine. From there, they can actually go ahead and add it and heart it and have it be a part of their magazine section or look at other back issues. This isn't incredibly clear, and it does kind of break convention in terms of some of the other iOS standards that Apple has provided as guidelines. Some recommendations that I would make to help kind of, you know, just make this a better experience is from the browse the catalog section. So if you're in like browse catalog A through M, have the text of that particular magazine underneath the image, have a visual cue of some sort to take the user back into the actual back catalog of that section. Another thing I would do is bring up the ability to actually start building your magazine collection at a higher level. So you can possibly even include the heart icon on the browse catalog section in addition to having it shown on the that magazine's back catalog section. And then if you were to click the actual image for that particular magazine when you're browsing it, it would take you into that particular issue. A lot of these are very closely related with the visibility of system status and consistency and standards, and just really providing a consistent experience across iOS apps. I hope this helps. Thank you.
Hey, Jim. Thank you. Yeah, it helps me understand a little bit about usability and UX and stuff like that. I don't know that it helps Apple much because obviously they're not paying attention, right? I don't know what's going on. I guess I'm a little bit confused because, you know, even things like the hidden UI that we talked about, right? Tapping on the magazine title to get to its back issues. I noticed that on the Mac, in the Mac's UI for magazines, that only works with the Apple News Enhanced magazines. If you have those PDF ones, guess what? I don't see any way to actually get into the back catalog for the PDF ones, because when you tap into it on the Mac, it just goes right to the sort of PDF full screen, and there actually is no masthead. So maybe that's a Marzipan issue, you know, the Apple's layer for taking iOS apps and bringing them to the Mac, and that didn't carry over, or maybe the Mac version just hasn't been updated as much as the iOS one, although we did get an update. So I don't know. It's just very, very confusing. But I think the problem I'm having is that, you know, your suggestions, while they're absolutely fabulous and they're great, they fall in line with just taking what Apple has done in the News app with adding News Plus and just tweaking it. And the problem I'm having with this is it feels like lately, especially with services-based things like iTunes, right? Or in this case, Apple's News app, Apple acquires new features and functionality in terms of other companies or other services, and then they just try and shoehorn them into their existing applications. And it ends up being a very bad experience. So specifically in the case of Apple News Plus, it feels like what Apple did was just find the easiest and quickest way to shoehorn the texture service into Apple News. And you know, I don't want to discount the talents of their engineering team and their user interface teams and stuff like that. I think they know this stuff, but I think there's also, you know, business things that get in the way of that. I just, like any big company, I think, you know, they're given a deadline, they have to do something, and they do their very best to make it work. For example, what I mean by shoehorning is that, you know, the hearts made sense when you were favoriting your kind of favorite news sources inside the News app, right? This is the kind of news I want to hear. I want technology news, or I want sports news, or whatever it might be. And then that would affect how your news was curated inside the News app. But I don't think it makes sense to heart magazines, and then that's how I basically subscribe or put the magazine into my magazine catalog. That doesn't make sense to me. It should be I subscribe, because that's what you do with magazines, right? You say, I want a subscription to this magazine, and doing that adds them to my library or my sort of stack of magazines, and then I can go flip through them, and they come in as new issues come out, and then I have them available to me in a library. Much more like podcasts, you know, that seems to make more sense. And then you could access your library and you could see all of your back issues. So why not use that methodology, a methodology that makes sense? Well, because they already had this News app thing, right? And they just needed this to fit into it. But it doesn't fit nicely and easily into it because it's a different animal. It's a different experience. It's a different thing. And it bugs me that more and more lately, it feels like Apple is not thinking about these things, right? it almost feels like there should have been a separate magazine app. And I've heard from people who use the Texture app, which it is a separate magazine app, and they say, frankly, they feel that experience was better than what is in Apple News Plus right now. And that's disappointing to hear. I wasn't a Texture subscriber, so I'm only, you know, I'm taking this secondhand, but I have no reason not to believe members of the MacCast community who are telling me this, right? So I think Apple needs to kind of think, especially as they move into doing more services, they're going to need to think a lot more strongly and a lot more completely about these user experiences. And they've always been about the user experience. So I think for us Apple fans, it's a little bit frustrating to see these sorts of things. I get that they're trying to move quickly. They're trying to integrate these services, but maybe they need to take a step back and realize that if they continue to present these confusing, bad user experiences, and I've talked a lot about the hidden UI stuff, which I absolutely hate because I think discoverability is very, very important when it comes to user interface, that you know, Apple's going to end up in trouble with a lot of these services. They have to be easy to use. You know, Apple Music, I think, is a pretty good experience and something to draw from. But again, it's still kind of shoehorned into iTunes in a way, in many ways. So, you know, I don't know how they fix it. I don't know what you do. I think they're going to have to blow things up before things get better. And I'm not sure at this point if they're willing to do that or not. They haven't shown that they really are. But I would hope maybe they're not afraid to, because they haven't been in the past, to throw things out and start over. I'd like to see them start over on a number of things, including like the file system on iOS, iTunes and the music app, and also the news app. I'm pretty happy with Apple TV and the way it's going. I'm enjoying the beta of the new Apple TV experience, so that one might be okay. Maybe because the TV app is a relatively new thing. I don't know. But I'd love to get all of the community's thoughts and opinions on this. So if you have a thought and opinion on the News Plus app or any of the new things that Apple's doing or any Apple services or apps that currently exist, shoot me some emails and some audio comments, maccast@gmail.com. And Jim, certainly thank you for sending in your information and sharing your experience and your insight with the community. But with that, that is going to do it for this episode of the MacCast. Before I leave you, I do want to take a quick moment and thank a show sponsor, Smile, makers of Text Expander, PDF Pen, also Text Expander for iPhone and iPad, along with PDF Pen for iOS and PDF Pen Scan Plus. You can get more information and details on all of their great software by visiting smilesoftware.com/podcast. Bandwidth for the MacCast is provided by CacheFly. You can find them at CacheFly.com. And all advertising on the MacCast is handled by Backbeat Media. They are at BackbeatMedia.com. As always, I love hearing from you. Keep those audio comments coming. We had a bunch of great audio comments this week, and I want to share more of those. It's always great to kind of have a two-way conversation, even if it's not in real time. So send your emails and your audio comments to maccast@gmail.com. You can ask a question, just make a comment. Let me know about something you want to hear covered on a future episode of the MacCast. You can send those, like I said, to maccast@gmail.com or call in on the listener hotline and leave a voicemail. That phone number, 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-IAM-9. If you need show notes, links to anything that I talked about on this or any other episode of the MacCast, you can find those at the website. That's at maccast.com. And if you want to follow me on social media, you can find me on Twitter, twitter.com/MacCast, or you can check out the MacCast Facebook page over at facebook.com/TheMacCast. But that's going to do it for now. Until next time, I'll talk to you all again real soon.